according to the rules of Rasa Shastra, an indirect utterance is considered preferable and more powerful than an indirect utterance at revealing the actual inner meaning of what is being conveyed. And according to that standard, a gopi whose name is not even mentioned, is Vimita, is recognizing the footprints of her mistress and praising her good fortune. And the way she says it, it's not that Krishna has stolen her away, but she has stolen Krishna away. So, this verse is very significant in many ways, one of which, it's the only verse in Bhagavatam that mentions the holy name of Srimati Radhika. And for this, and even that in a disguised way, it's disguised within a word. Anayaradito, containing in it within its shell, Radhika. So, other sampradayas, they sometimes challenge the Gaudiyas. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas give a position of such high esteem to Srimati Radhika. Her name isn't even mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it is in this verse, in a slightly covered kind of way. Just as a chaste Bhaktiji keeps her head covered. Shukadeva Goswami kept to the very chaste form of his Ishtadevi, covered, shrouded within another word. And that word means by her, Krishna has been perfectly worshipped. So by deductive reasoning, we can understand who he's referring to. But we should contemplate deeply why Shukadeva Goswami did not even overtly mention her name. These days are meant to go deeply to the great fortunes which we've been offered. Because really, we should be observing the appearance of Sri Krishna and Radha every day. Because actually they're appearing every day in some universe, but they should actually be appearing on our lips and in our hearts every day if we understand what we're doing when we chant the Maha Mantra, which is also not mentioned in the Bhagavatam directly. But because the Srimad Bhagavatam is really, you know, you hear it throughout, Sri Shukla Vajra. Shukla is the parrot pet of Srimati Radharani, who is chanting her glories in this unique shastra. There's no need to marry the pastimes of Krishna. That's done very elegantly in the Brahmavaivarta Purana. What remained required was to elucidate the virtues of the holy name, form, qualities, shelter, devotion, and Srila Prabhupada even went so far as to say the purpose of coming to Vrindavan is to take shelter of Srimati Radharani. Because in that holy, her land, everything moves according to her desire. which functions to purify the living entity and to please Krishna. When Mother Bhumi was aggrieved because of the insatiable lust of demoniac kings who were posing as Kshatriyas, and she went to Brahma. Brahma took her to Vishnu to hear their plight. And Lord Vishnu said, "I cannot rectify this situation. Only a superior revelation of love can counteract all the evils and perils afflicting the earth at this most treacherous time." So Lord Vishnu took the devas and, of course, Bhumi, aboard a bejeweled boat which sailed upstream in the celestial Ganges. This is a narration from another yuga, that's why it has slight differences in the appearance of Krishna in this yuga, this millennium. So they sailed through, there was a hole through the coverings of the universe through which the current of Ganges was flowing. So they sailed through those holes, and as they emerged, they could see all the universes like little bubbles in an ocean, appearing very insignificant. And then that boat crossed over the snow-white Virata, and they entered into the Brahmajyoti, in which there is unlimited spiritual planets, which also appeared insignificant in comparison to the effulgence in which they were resting. That effulgence emanated from one planet, upon which one personality, Sri Govinda, was casually leaning against a tree. So the demigods approached Goloka, and at the golden gates, they were stopped by two little girls holding little sticks the size we use for herding cows. And they said, "Can you tell us where you're from so we can introduce you to Krishna?" And the demigods kind of looked at one another because they didn't really know the address of their particular universe. How do we just distinguish it from other innumerable universes? So then the girls started to laugh, respectfully, but in a childlike way, they thought that humorous. Then how can we introduce you to Krishna if you don't even know where you're coming from? And they were just befuddled. But then Lord Vishnu, taking compassion, seeing that the great devas, set up by Rama and Shiva, were intimidated by these little girls, he said, "We hail from the universe which is blessed by the water, descending from the hole made by the toe of Lord Vaman." I said, "Well, why didn't you say that before?" They went and told Krishna, came back, opened the gates, and then they were on their own, led by the hypnotic, mystical song of a divine flute, which led them through forests of Chitamani trees, pastoral landscape, where Kamadhenu cows, beautifully decorated with garlands, wandered, and gopas dressed with magnificent turbans herded the cows. And then they came to the shade of Govardhan Hill, at the base of which Sri Krishna was sitting beside Radha. And as the demigods approached and offered their dandavats, they saw all the infinite avatars entering into the body of Krishna as he just casually looked lovingly upon the dead guys and asked, "What can I do for you?" And when they explained the situation, he said, "Yes, I will come." And when he said that, Srimati Radharani began to cry, "How can I live without you?" I said, "There's no question of living without me. You're coming also. Because it is our pastimes which will enchant the pious and counteract the evil influence of these asuras who are so lusty and so degraded. The superior display of love, the utmost of which is Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, is the only remedy for the plight of earth at this time. So we will go." She kept crying, "But how can I live in a world where I do not have the shade and shelter of Govardhan Hill, the flow of Jamuna, the forest of Vrindavan, and the cows?" And then Krishna called all the entities of Braj and told them, "Go there." And she saw them appear on the earth. She said, "Oh, now I can go." And the devas were satisfied. There's many versions as to how Srimati Radharani made her appearance. I believe this Brahma Bhagavata Purana explains how she appeared out of the sacrificial fire. Whereas Srila Prabhupada first explained the story exactly in detail, with only the names being changed, the appearance of Sita. King Rishabhanu was plowing the field, and in the furrow, a golden child appeared. But then we later came to know that all the Shastras explained it. That, well, of course, there's many dimensions of absolute reality all interacting and overlapping in the appearance and pastimes of the absolute truth. So, you know, which angle do you want to come from? We'll try and intertwine some of them just to give you a concept. As Srila Rupa Goswami explains it, not to say that this is different than any other way that anybody else explains it, but, you know, Rajarasa is so intricate in so many different patterns of so many different devotees' bhavas, interacting and overlapping into beautiful patterns of ras which are ever expanding. So when the Himalayas gave birth to their daughter Parvati, the Vindhya mountain was a little jealous that he got Lord Shiva as his son-in-law. "I would like to have somebody better than Lord Shiva as my son-in-law." And he performed great tapasya and was rewarded with the birth of two daughters, Sanjavali and Srimati Radharani. But shortly after their birth, Putana, who was just flying all over the countryside abducting children to drink their blood, she picked up in her grips Sanjavali and Srimati Radharani and flew off to kill them. And the brahmanas were so infuriated that they chanted mantras to kill the witch, and when her life was in such jeopardy, she dropped the babies and they fell into Jamuna, where the pastime overlaps with that of Suchandra and Kalavati, who were very qualified prince and princess. You know, when Lord Vishnu told the demigods to take birth in the Jada dynasty, they didn't all take birth. They took birth on earth as expansions of the devas, who are opposites of the eternal associates of Lord. So they appeared in different places, and gradually many of them integrated with the Jada dynasty. So Suchandra and Kalavati, very qualified, prince and princess upon their marriage, what did they do? Very exemplary. They didn't go to a palace to enjoy royal delights. They went to the forest where they ate a diet consisting of leaves and berries, quite appropriate for monkeys. And after a long period of great tapasya, Lord Brahma appeared to them and said, "What is it you desire?" And he said, "A daughter who will be the consort of Krishna." And Brahma was so elated, because usually people perform tapasya to please Brahma, and then when he comes, they give their list. They want a wife and a car and a house by the sea and Jagadishari. So when he heard that they wanted the consort, he was so elated. And then he wanted to be the mountain upon which she would, you know, in some couples take birth, but in every couple play in her childhood pastimes. So, Suchandra and Kalavati later merged into their prototypes, Vishuddhana and Kirtana, who had left Varshana because they weren't getting the daughter they desired. And they thought, along the same lines as Nanda Jashoda, who left Nandagram to go to Gokul next to Rahul on the back of Jamuna, thinking that Jamuna is so merciful, she may fulfill our desires. So when King Vishvamitra came to bathe one day in Jamuna, and he saw this golden aura emanating from a golden lotus in the center, and when his eyes adjusted, he saw a golden baby who was the source of that effulgence emanating. Oh, Rava. And he tried to enter the water to reach the girl, but the current was so deep and strong. And then Brahma appeared in his swan airplane, handed over the baby, and reminded him of his previous life and the tapasya and the purpose for it, and said, "Here she is. Take very good care of her, because she is the original Lakshmi." And Srila Prabhupada said like that too when he introduced Radhastami. Don't think that Srimati Radhika is a girl like your daughter, sister, or mother. She is Devi Krishna Maya Prota Radhika Bhagadevata Sarva Lakshmi Maya Sarva Kanti Sarvamaya. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radhika is the direct feminine counterpart of Lord Shri Krishna. She is the central figure and source of all the goddesses of fortune. She alone possesses the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive Shri Krishna. She is the internal primeval potency to the Lord. She is the transformation of Krishna's love, the personification of his loving Shakti, the manifestation of his mercy, which is our only way to attain him. So on one level, she's non-different from Krishna. It's not like we're worshipping a different personality in one sense. The male-female principle pervades all existence, beginning with Radha and Krishna. But the difference between the two is explained by Srila Prabhupada, that Krishna demands sarva dharma pritya dhyā māmikam sharanam pritya. That's a very difficult order to fulfill. He's demanding we abandon everything. And if you understand the gravity of that instruction, it is very, very difficult. I'm not talking about physical possession. I'm talking about the subtle attachments to being recognized. The subtlest of all the elements, the false ego that brings us into this world, and all the other give up everything. How much do we cherish hearing of this disciple who approached you about that and said, I'm the most fallen, and Prabhupada's response, you're the most nothing. You're just insignificant. Can we cherish being insignificant? Or do we want to be recognized? Some being the bully or a manager? No, you have to abandon the subtlest roots of such aspirations and ambitions. So Krishna is very difficult to approach. And he's more difficult to please. So, Srila Prabhupada next said, but Srimati approaching Srimati Radharani means that by your service, if you please her, she approaches Krishna and said, this devotee is so nice. He's better than me. Please accept him. And Krishna will have to accept because he cannot refuse Srimati Radharani. He's controlled. He's bound. He's directed by the rope of her love. Now this is the point upon which the difference between the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and all their Vaishnava lives hinges. You know, the Nimbarka Sampradaya is unique in their emphasis on the necessity of taking shelter to lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and the high esteem for the gopis' pure mode of worship and love for Krishna. But there's a difference. They conceive of Krishna as the Nayaka, the hero, who approaches the Nayaka, the heroine, who's waiting in the grove, waiting impatiently for the heroine, Krishna. And she hears rustling and runs out, is he coming? No. And she has to wait. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas do not like this conception. Why should she wait? Their conception is that pastime for which Imlita is so dear that Lord Gauranga would chant his rounds there when he's staying in Braj. Because that's where Krishna had to wait for Srimati Radhika. Actually, I was given an assignment by the 108 Club, whatever that is, to give a PowerPoint presentation, whatever that is. But the theme I can understand, how Radha and Krishna unite into the golden avatar. Well, one way is at Imlita, when Krishna was waiting and waiting, and you hear the rustling of the leaves. Is that her? You know, no, it's not here. She was delayed. And he was waiting and contemplating her beautiful qualities, which Rupa Goswami lists as 25 major, you know, qualities of body and body beauty, speech, interaction with others, and qualities. And then one more, number 25. She controls Krishna. So he was waiting, and she was delayed. And then, you know, Krishna was instructed by Nanda's priest, Bhagavati Muni, to, you know, chant Narayana mantra in the meditation room in the palace. And Krishna would go into that meditation room. He would always pronounce and remember his guru and start chanting. But all that would come from his mouth is Radhe, 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 Radhe. So in the grove at Imlita, he was waiting. He took shelter in her name. And as he was chanting her name, he became more and more infused with her qualities, her love, to the point that he became golden. And when Srimati Radharani finally arrived, and the whole grove was radiant with golden aura, she would... What is this? It must be some demigod waiting to meet some sylvan goddess, so I'll just, you know, leave. But then she heard
her name.
Radhe Radhe. Called in the voice of Krishna. What is this?
When she saw all the animals and birds and trees and creepers and everyone,
they were all looking at the Kunj, because even in Vrindavan, where miracles abound, this is something exceptional. And they were all looking and hushed, speechless. And they all made way for her to enter into the opening to the Kunj, and she looked. And she saw, that's my Shyam, with his complexion is golden. And he's calling me. So she approached and touched him, and he opened his eyes. And he was so immersed in thinking that he was Radha that he was completely bewildered when he saw her before him. He'd become golden. This is the first appearance of the golden avatar. But perhaps more significant, not significant, but multidimensional, is the wonderful. If you go to Braj, to Parikrama of Nandigram, all the kuns are kind of sapphire color, at least it used to be. Go around Varshana, and the kuns have a different aura. And the one in particular, Philipakura, is golden. Because of a wonderful pastime. You see, when Durvasa Muni came to Braj, he was served by Srimati Radharani with such care and devotion. He was very pleased by her pure service, that he blessed her, that whoever eats your cooking will become immune from disease and stay immune from danger. So when Mother Jashoda heard this blessing, she requested Srimati Radhika, just a little girl, to come every day and cook for Krishna. And Mother Jashoda and Mother Rohini were convinced that it was due to her cooking that Krishna enjoyed unending victory over all the demons. So Mother Jashoda loved Balaram as much as Krishna. She loved Radhika as much as Krishna. But later on, I don't forget that part of the day, after their marriage, in about half the bridge buses, the observed that Mother Jashoda loves her daughter-in-law even more than Krishna. But anyway, at this point, she had equal affection for Radha as for Krishna and Balaram. So she would always remind him, Balaram, you have to protect Krishna from demons. But regarding Srimati Radharani, she was thinking, she couldn't get this thought out of her mind. She would be the most suitable bride for my Krishna. And she was always conceiving of strategies to bring Radhe into her home as her daughter. She couldn't get it out of her mind. But of course this cannot be in Braj, because the forbidden love characteristic of Parakya Ras offers the widest range of mellow tastes for Krishna's pleasure. The spontaneous ingenuity needed to cross over the obstacles opposed by relatives and society makes it very dynamic. Of course, later on, in case we don't get that far, the Amsas, the demigoddess Amsas, actually married Krishna and Swakya Bhav, while their prototype, identical gopis, maintained Parakya Bhav. And that way, everyone's desires were fulfilled. Anyway, at this point, Mother Jashoda was obsessed with this idea of having Radhika as her daughter-in-law. So, she was thinking,
that there no one has the beauty to match my Krishna. Her qualities perfectly complement those of my son. And of course, Mother just showed his heart as guided by the compass of her son's welfare and pleasure. It, all these things considered, she took and she finished cooking. Mother just showed a good Radhe by the hand, pulled her to her side, and when she hugged her, her body, like that of Krishna, just melted like butter into her side. And Mother Jashoda took her lotus hands and held up her palms, gazed at the auspicious marks, and with halo she wiped her beautiful pinkish palms until they turned yellow. And then she asked, "Little Radhika, do you know what this means?" She said, "No, Mata. What's the significance?" She says, "This means that you are engaged to be married to my Gopal." Radhika was a little shocked. "Well, what would my mother think?" "There's a little girl. What would my mother think? Plus, I'm very attached to wandering in the groves and playing in the sand." Because as we discussed previously, it was by the mercy and desire of Srimati Radhika that Vrindavan manifests. And although Vrindavan, the Dham, is a manifestation of Balaram, who creates the facilities, the land, the houses, the roads, the trees, the paraphernalia, it is all for the service of Srimati Radharani to infuse all those entities with her love. In this way, there's overlapping between Balaram and Radhika in service to Krishna and their function as guru as well. We might get into that later if there's time. So anyway, she was very concerned, "What will my mother think?" And this may curtail my freedom to wander through the groves and play in the sand. Just a little girl, remember. So, Mother Jashoda said, "Priyari, let your mother decide. She knows what's best for you, but keep in mind that you are blossoming into the sunlight of youth. And at some point, you must accept the responsibilities that accompany it." Okay. So, Radhika just kind of floated down the winding steps as Mother just showed him looked on. Her heart just going with her. She joined her girlfriends, headed back to Varshana, and stopped and looked. And she told Lalita, "You know what this means?" "Yes." And Tungavidya replied, "This could be very entangling for you." Lalita said, "But it's no big deal." "What do you mean?" "Just wash your hands. That's all you have to do. Look, here's a beautiful kun. Just wash your hands and nobody will ever know that you were betrothed to Krishna. And you will maintain your freedom and your parakya bhava." So, Mother Jashoda was also thinking of her own protection. She was thinking, she's so beautiful. When she gets like a little bit grown up, the devas will be falling from the sky like raindrops. And so Mother Jashoda, this is another manifestation of her protective nature. So anyway, following the instruction of her guru, Lalita, Srimati Radharani walked down the steps to that beautiful kund, Pilikakur. Beautiful kund, surrounded by kalpa vrikshas that are all just bowing down because they're so overladen with fruit. And the creepers and flowers just cast their pollen into the water, making very beautiful hues on the surface.
And as she walked down the steps, and she lifted her skirt enough just to step into the water, and she looked down, and she saw her reflection. She was captivated by her own beauty, and she began to reflect for the first time that maybe I should marry Krishna and always be at his side. But the Sakyas were encouraging her not to, so she began washing her hands. And as she saw the reflection of the golden circular waves rippling across the pond, and then in the corners of the pond, you know, bouncing back, making all these patterns of ripples, these beautiful patterns sparkling with golden aura, sparkling in the sunshine, characteristic of the patterns and the formations, if you could see them, of the flow of Braj Ras, she became so captivated by this visible display of the energy field of rasa that she just started like mechanically washing her hands and not even noticing what she was doing. So after they were way beyond clean, she just kept washing her hands. And Chitra told her that, hey Radhe, you better stop washing your hands, because you've made the whole kund turn golden. It appears that the golden mahabhav of your heart has also entered into the waters. And if you don't stop washing your hands, then all of Vrindavan is going to turn golden. So you better stop and come on out, because you will never be able to conceal the prema of your heart if all of Braj turns gold. And everybody will know about your secret relationship with Krishna, so you better stop. And then she got all shy and embarrassed and said, I'm not the only golden girl around here. But Lalita said, yes, but the rest of us have the same complexion as you just because of our continual association. And your love is very contagious, and it has affected us all. So then they just scurried back to Darshana, thinking that the whole predicament is resolved. And then here comes Krishna looking for a lost cow. And he walks right by the kund because he was just focused on where's that cow. And then he thought, what was different about that landscape back there? And he forgot about the cow, turned around and went back to the kund and looked, what is that golden color? The kund was distinctly golden. Is this the work of devas? Or maybe it's demons? And he approached cautiously. And he looked at his own reflection in the surface of the water. And for the first time, Krishna saw himself with a golden hue. But it doesn't answer my question. What is this golden substance? So he reached out to touch the water. Because he was asking the animals and the trees and the creepers, and nobody was responding. They were just watching in amazement at what is transpiring here. So he thought he would figure it out for himself. He reached out to touch the water. Vishnu, Vishnu! There was like some ecstasy surcharging that water that he had never felt before. But what is that? What is this golden substance? But once again, the only response to his question was his own echo. Because all the peacocks and deer and trees and creepers and flowers were stunned to watch this wonderful pastime unfolding. And that simply deepened Krishna's curiosity. And then he began feeling the astas satagabhavas just surging through his frame. And he became
overwhelmed with an extraordinary flavor of loving disposition, which he had never experienced before. And he was thinking to himself that I'm no stranger to praying, but I'm the subject of prayer. The Brijavasins are the object of my praying, and I am the subject. But now I'm feeling that I am the object of their prayer. And this love for myself is extraordinary. It's like when you're a child, you're the object of your mother's affection. So you know what motherly love is from one side. But you don't know what it is fully until you become a mother. And your child is the object of motherly love, and you're the subject. Then you've seen it from both sides. So this is the two sides by which Krishna wants to understand what is Braj Ras. What is Krishna praying? He knows it from the perspective of the subject, but he doesn't know it through the eyes of the object. And to really fully understand, he has to take the role of a devotee. So, in this pastime, his appetite to taste Srimati Radharani's love was increasing. So, he stepped into the water. And then he stepped down to the next step. And then he kept going down the steps, immersing himself in the golden waters, which were transmuting his sapphire luster into something golden. And that change in his complexion was indicative of an internal paradigm shift, his change of heart. So he went deeper and deeper through his neck, and then over his mouth, over his eyes, over his head. And as he was just walking through the, you know, around the bottom of the kund, still trying to decipher what is that golden substance, only the peacock feather on his head indicated his submarine movements as all the animals, trees, birds, and creepers watched in utter amazement. And after a little while, when Krishna came out of the water, completely golden in complexion, he was calling only Krishna, Krishna. He was crying for Krishna, for his darshan. With his arms raised in supplication, he was, and tears in his eyes, singing his own holy names. He was searching for Krishna behind every tree, asking every creeper, entering every kunj, inquiring from the deer and the peacocks, "Have you seen Krishna? Where is he gone?" And the intensity of the love and separation with which Krishna was crying for Krishna just made all of the birds and animals and trees and creepers burst into tears. Everyone was simply crying. But as the mystical potion of any intoxicant, not intoxicant, but herbal remedy, gradually wears off, Krishna gradually transmuted back from gold to emerald color. And where's that cow? And he was quite distracted at first, but gradually he remembered that he was looking for a cow. And he just went off into the forest searching for that cow. Nevertheless, it was not the end of the pastime, as Tungavidya and Lalita had assured that it would be, because there were witnesses. And by the time Srimati Radhika returned to the palace, her parents already knew what had happened. And she found King Vrishabhanu and Kirtita were dancing and hugging one another And they embraced Radhe and told her immediately, "We accept."
And then they took this huge platter and loaded it up with jewels and gems.
You know, every one worth a king's ransom, you know, and inlaid in gold, all kinds of.
And they sent that by royal courier to Nandigram to confirm to Nanda and Yashoda what they just told Radhe. "We accept." So within an instant, you know how news travels in Braj, the whole town was singing in great ecstasy of delight, "Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam." And but then Nanda and Yashoda were thinking, you know, King Vrishabhanu is so much more opulent than we are. What do we have? You know, butter, milk, curd. How, you know, we have to send back, you know, some reciprocation, but how are we going to do that? We don't have nearly that much wealth. But then they couldn't think about it for long because everyone in the town was arriving at the palace for the big festival. And all night they were just, you know, serving their guests very lovingly, expressing such hospitality that by the next day when all the guests had left, they looked back at the plate, it was empty. Well, where'd the jewels go? Well, they understood at that time if there's a thief, if there's theft anywhere in Braj, you know who it is. "Krishna, did you take the gems?" I said, "Yes, Pita." "Why?" "Because I thought you should have so much more. So I planted them in a newly plowed field. And I watered them so that they'll grow. And you're going to have more jewels and gems than you know what to do with." But Nanda Maharaj said, "But Krishna, you can't plant jewels and gems the same way you do corn and wheat. It doesn't work like that. They won't grow." Krishna, "Well, yes, they will. I'm sure of it. And the worst case scenario is you just have to dig up the seeds and you won't have lost anything. But I'm sure it'll be growing and bearing fruit. Let's go see." So they went and there wasn't anything growing. It was just a plowed field. So Krishna dug up one of the gems, but it had already sprouted. And right before everyone's eyes, it turned into a wish-fulfilling tree, producing every kind of gem you could imagine. So they loaded up a plate, which they sent by royal courier, and then they brought in the ox carts and just started loading them up, one after another, all these gems. So the royal courier arrived to Kirtida Vrishabhanu to convey that, "Yes, we accept your proposal." And then everyone was so elated, except poor Namasi, who was watching this whole pastime unravel and thinking, "This cannot be. If Radha and Krishna were married, then Srimati Radharani would be demoted to a level like that of a queen of Dwarka. And then the world will never know the ecstatic Mahabhav with all its adventures and wonders. And furthermore, there will be no function, no reason, no purpose requiring the appearance of the golden avatar." So Purnamasa reminded him, "Oh, you need the Guru's blessings." "Oh yes." They approached her for her blessings. And Purnamasa, so learned in the astrological sciences, she said, "You know, when I look at the charts of these children, and I must remind you, they are merely children, I see there's going to be all kinds of problems. They won't be compatible in a marital relationship. At least not at this time. Later, maybe, you know, you can check with Garga Muni, but at this time, you better just forget the whole thing." And then by the influence of Yogamaya, who is, you know, who characterized exercises the mystical influence of the Dog, it can resolve any crisis or conflict or difficulty. The whole thing just dissolves. So, with the setting of this Parakeet above, in this chapter, we're hearing about Krishna leaving the gopis with Srimati Radharani, and then eventually he leaves her as well. And this puts the whole concept of Radha and Krishna's pastimes into a very sobering perspective. Generally, we don't talk about Radha and Krishna's pastimes much. The very innocent ones a little, the intimate ones not at all. Because these highest concepts, if they're misunderstood in the beginning, they'll never reach the goal. They'll be misled. So these things are quite confidential. Not so much the innocent ones, but the romantic we don't discuss very much. So, the lesson we can all imbibe from Rasa Leela is that when Krishna left with Srimati Radharani, he also left her. And, you know, their separation is sung in the next chapter of the Gopi Gita. And if you follow the sequence of verses in their songs, first of all, understand the context. Being called from their homes by the song of Krishna's flute, being warned by their, whether parents or guardians or husbands, depending on the age of the individual gopis, that we're not going to take you back if you go. And they went. So this means meeting Krishna in the forest means they were rejected by family. They were branded as a disgrace to the village. They were condemned by society. They were outcast to Varnashram. They had no shelter, no protection, no means of maintaining their lives, no place to eat, nowhere to sleep. Their lives were ruined while they were still practically children. And then Krishna also abandoned them in the midst of the forest at night. You know, we like to complain when things don't go our way. But is there any kind of abuse comparable to this? They couldn't go home. They couldn't live in the forest. They had forsaken everything for Krishna, and he had left them. And that's not all. In their songs which follow, we hear an example of this standard of Rasa Shastra, that the indirect meaning is more powerful at revealing the inner meaning. The indirect approach is more powerful at revealing the inner meaning. The gopis are the vessels which contain the largest amount and purest quality of love for Krishna. But due to their humble nature and their social circumstances, they had to keep it concealed, kept confidential, locked within their hearts. But in the Gopi Gita, that gold becomes revealed and expressed for all the world to worship and aspire to serve. Because what is their conclusion after being forsaken by family, society, friendship, love, their lives ruined by Krishna, who then left them alone in a forest at night? Their conclusion was, oh dearly beloved, our only concern is that your lotus feet, which are so soft and delicate, will be wounded by the forest path. Their concern is only for Krishna's comfort and pleasure and service. And that's why Srila Prabhupada said that the Guru is a manifestation of Balaram, the four rasas, and he's the representative of Srimati Radharani in the realm of Madhurya. Because she perfects the principle of humble servant to the servant to the servant. The ability to embrace just being nothing but a speck of dust at the lotus feet of Sri Guru. Because that speck of dust has a most loving relationship with those lotus feet. So that, our Guru, that our Guru Parampara is broadcasting and handing down, making available to everyone. And how is it available? That same principle applies to the Hare Krishna mantra. Srila Prabhupada said, you can't really translate the mantra because it's names of Radha and Krishna. But he gave us a translation to understand the proper mood. It means, O Radha, O Mother Hara, please engage me in Krishna's service. But that's another indirect meaning, because the inner meaning, indicated by the indirect, is, O Radha, please engage me in your service. Because according to the principle of Ashraya, the need for the Ashraya Vigraha, the shelter-giving devotee, our experience of Krishna's love and our ability to please and serve Him is predicated on how much love we have in our hearts. And any honest, humble jiva will admit that he doesn't have very much. It's the nature of jiva. We're insignificant, tiny. How much love can we offer to Krishna, and how much of His love can we assimilate in our own hearts? Not very much. But the Ashraya Vigraha, the shelter-giving devotees, the Parampara, who are servants of the servants of Lord Balaram and four of the rasas and Srimati Radharani and the higher, they have such hearts, so pure, so large, that Krishna can fill them with unlimited, and so humble, that Krishna can fill them with unlimited oceans of devotion. And by service to them, we can tap into that ocean. And we can also, by offering our tiny little insignificant love offerings to them, they can offer to Srimati Radharani, who will approach Krishna and say, this devotee is so nice. He's better than me. Krishna, please accept him. So, today is a very sacred day for praying for blessings. Because no one can do this Krishna. No one can know Krishna as Srimati Radharani does. But as that 25th quality states, she alone can actually control Krishna. And the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, you know, cherish these concepts that she controls Krishna. She's more beautiful than Krishna.
But doesn't that sound like we're minimizing Krishna? No. We're actually glorifying Krishna more in this way. Because the most cherishable quality of Krishna to the hearts of his devotees is this aspect of Bhaktivatsala. In his liking to completely give up himself to his devotees. But that would never be drawn out. Krishna is full of rasa. He knows it. He feels it. But it takes someone else to draw it out and make it flow and distribute it to others. And reciprocate by taking their tiny offerings of love and infuse the infinite bhakti within her own heart, offering to Krishna. And in that reciprocation, our aspiration for a loving relationship with Krishna and something to offer becomes a tangible reality. And for that to be fulfilled and manifest, we have to pray to the Vaishnavas and to Sri Guru that their blessings will recommend us to the higher powers, Lord Balaram. And if he recommends to Srimati Radha, then will be accepted by Krishna into his infinite entourage of highly qualified, beautiful, and loving associates. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
They were in different consciousness after coming back. They were attracted, but they were not qualified to sin. But in the course of the pastimes, they entered more and more and integrated more and more into Krishna's pastimes. The demigods who assisted in Krishna's pastimes merged into their prototypes of Krishna's associates. Return home. And that's actually the time when, oh, we didn't discuss the other reasons why Shukadev Goswami didn't mention the holy name of Srimati Radhika, because he's her parent. That when Krishna actually took the demigods, the demigod amsas of the Brijabasis to the spiritual world, you know, that's when Krishna had returned to Braj from Dwarka after killing Dantavakra and, you know, fulfilling his promises to marry the gopis and satisfy Nanda Yashoda. After that, after his duties in Braj had been fulfilled, he told Daruga, well, make your chariot bigger, because all the Brijavasis, you know, all the deer, all the cows, and the peacocks, and everybody had to get in that chariot. And Daruga took them to the spiritual sky. There's only one person left behind. You know, the Christians have this, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it, this, and then apparently it's very dramatic, this left behind series. You know, when Jesus returns, and he calls all the believers, and they go with him, And everybody else is left behind. So, you know, all these people are cruising along in a 747, but the pilot, the co-pilot are believers, so they just disappear. And everybody's, you know, left behind in this airplane with no pilot or co-pilot. And, you know, it's a kind of crude way to demonstrate the horror of being left behind when everybody goes back to Godhead. So actually one person was left behind. He was told to stay behind. That's Shuka. When Krishna took all the Brijavasis back to the spiritual world, he told Shuka, you have to stay behind. And he was traumatized. He's the pet parrot of Srimati Radharani who would sit on her hand as she would fondle him and feed him pomegranate seeds and sweetly tell him, chant Krishna, Krishna. And he would chant for her. And then sometimes he'd fly over to Nandigram and Krishna would hear this bird singing so sweetly, Krishna, Krishna, and you take him, hold out his, and he'd land, and Krishna would embrace him. So when he's told, you have to stay behind, where was his shelter? First he flew to Bhuvaneshwar, because Lord Shiva was reciting Bhagavad to Parvati. But Parvati is kind of a Mataji, and you know, when you get the philosophical section, she would just nod out. And so he got back to the romantic parts, and she'd come to life. So, you know, when she woke up from, you know, her romantic parts, he noticed that she'd been sleeping through the whole night. But who was that that kept telling me, follow, follow? Who was that? And he saw this little parrot. He said, you imposter, what are you doing? So he chased him with his trident. And the parrot, little humble little Brijavasi parrot being chased by Lord Shiva in a bad mood with his trident, he took off seeking for shelter. He went to the Himalayas and found Vyasadeva and reciting Bhagavatam to his wife, and she was like Parvati. She was like in rapt attention with her mouth open, and Shuka flew right in her mouth. And then Lord Shiva came and Vyasadeva told him, you know, don't harass that parrot, he's a great soul. So, you know, with the parrot in her womb, you know, he took human form as an embryo and stayed there 16 years, and he didn't want to come out. He didn't want to see this world any more than Srimati Radhika wanted to see this world. That's why she was born blind. She didn't want to see this world until she could see Krishna. So the parrot had the same mood. He didn't want to see this world. So Krishna had to personally come and tell him, you know, he'll be all right. But the reason is that there's this king that really needs to hear the Bhagavatam. So Shukadeva Goswami came out of the womb, immediately left, and went to Maharaj Pariksha. Knowing that he had only 7 days to live, and if Shukadeva Goswami ever mentioned once the holy name of his mistress, he would go into ecstasy, which would make him outwardly inert for 6 months. Inwardly enlivened, outwardly inert for 6 months if he once mentioned the name of Radhika. But Maharaj Pariksha only had 7 days to live. Plus, Shukadeva Goswami looking at the audience, seeing Munis and Gyanis and the impersonalists, and I can't mention the name of Srimati Radhika, he was assembling. They won't understand, they might commit offenses. So he couched her name in this verse. Anyway, yes, the demigods, after returning from Golok, they assisted in Krishna's pastimes, at the conclusion of which they returned to the spiritual world. But that's the portion of the demigods who merged into the association of the Brijavasis, while their counterparts remained involved in management of the universe. So all these different dimensions are harmonized by Krishna's lila. Anything else?
But not to make, so not to offer to do anything.
Well, it depends on whether the disciple's destination is Goloka Vrindavan or elsewhere. Because if the disciple's destination is Goloka Vrindavan, even though his primary ras may be Sakyadasya Vatsalya, there is no ras or no anything in Goloka Vrindavan that is not at least tinged with Madhurya. So Balaram as Sandini manifests himself as the Dham and all the paraphernalia. But the Dham and the paraphernalia of the Dham is his facilitating Srimati Radharani to offer her love by way of all that unlimited facility for Krishna's pleasure. So if the disciple is destined to Madhurya Ras, he's recommended by Balaram to Srimati Radharani. But even if he's not destined for that Ras, but there's another Ras in the realm of Braj, that recommendation of Balaram to Srimati Radharani bestows that influence of Madhurya, which at least tinges all the other rasas in Braj. So that's where the service of Balaram and Srimati Radharani overlaps as Adikuru. Yeah, then it's under the jurisdiction of Balaram. If it's not in the higher mellow or in the realm of grudge, Srimati Radharani is not directly her ontological form involved. So we should celebrate. Srila Prabhupada made known such festivals as Radhastri so that we can come together, celebrate, congregate, contemplate deeply what this means. But it shouldn't just be a yearly occasion. It's something that should be integrated into our daily sadhana. Because we all have our Radha Krishna Murti given by Srila Prabhupada. It's the Hare Krishna mantra. And it is our service to bring Radha. As we say in our prayers to the spiritual master, he's always making artful arrangements for the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Well, how does that practically apply in our daily sadhana? That in our chanting Hare Krishna, we're bringing Radha and Krishna together to dance on our tongues. But that means we have to be in a very humble mood. You can't be obsessed with the thoughts, well, you know, am I going to be seen as a big devotee? Or how significant is my service? The significant thing is Krishna's pleasure. And he likes that some devotees have very, by material standards, insignificant positions and services. And if that's what pleases Krishna, then that is what is desirable. So we have to learn to desire only Krishna's pleasure. And that's what's being demonstrated in these verses of Bhagavatam. After Krishna had just abused the gopis in the most inconceivably unjust manner, their only concern is Krishna's pleasure. And in this way, the golden essence of love kept carefully concealed within their hearts, was revealed and exposed and distributed for all the world to experience by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, when Srila Prabhupada, 1965, observed Janmashtami, Vyasapuja, and Radhastami at sea, and just when he was approaching the western shores, and he wrote his poem, it began with the verse, I emphatically say to you, O brothers, you will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. And then he prays his own Guru Dev as that intimate associate of the son of Sadbhadasachi who desires that this holy name spread to every town and village of the world. And when all the living entities in all the streams and rivers and mountains and forests are all chanting Hare Krishna and they become happy, then the true Vaishnava's desires fulfill. He introduced that poem by saying, I emphatically declare to you, O brothers. He's addressing the Western world. He's addressing all of them. He's approaching Western shores for the first time. You will obtain your blessings from the Supreme Lord Krishna. And then Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. How Krishna is controlled by her is a topic of such potential controversy that Jayadeva Goswami didn't even want to write it. He thought, how can I write this? He took a break from writing, went to take his bath. And while he was bathing, Krishna dressed himself as Jayadeva Goswami and came and wrote in his manuscript. He's approaching Srimati Radhika, asking, may I place your feet upon my head as the crown? Jayadeva Goswami came back and saw the writing had already been done. He understood it was Krishna and accepted it as authorized. Anything else? Which word?
Very last one.
To a secluded place? Raha. R-A-H. A-H. Not the same. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.